Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly, quite literally, extra, live from geostationary orbit. Shock news from the Champions League quarterfinals. The words Liverpool, Chelsea and thriller found cohabiting in the same sentence. Elsewhere, Barcelona, forget the hype, they're not as good as Wolfsburg. And Manchester United, bottling it faster than a brewery when the Scotland team's in town, or just having a little wobble, a top beanie-hatted expert speaks. We look forward as well to a rip-roaring weekend in the Premier League relegation battle. Get the word from the Sid, appreciatively, at your post and mention the Championship. All that in Football Weekly Extra. Welcome on board, listener, where you're greeted by Barry Glendenning.
Hello, listener.
Rob Smythe.
Hello, listener.
And keep your hair on. It's Raphael Honigstein. Raphael, you just got a small little adjoinder to make to that intro, I think.
Well, I'm just thinking that a 4-0 is technically a better result than 5-1, so right. I'm sure many of the listeners will point that out to you.
All right,
but is it? Domestically, 5-1's better, and that's where Wolfsburg beat them.
Yeah, but if comparing the incomparable, then...
Right.
This is going well.
Should also add that when you said that in your introduction, then we pointed out that, you know, 4-1 or 5-1 was probably not as good as 4-0. You went, sure, who's going to point that out to us? And we all burst out laughing, knowing our listeners and their habits as we do.
Right, okay. Indeed, because they care, Barry. Because they care.
First.
Yeah. Now, okay, Champions League quarterfinals, shall we? Four games, four decent matches, which is a little bit unexpected, and possibly none more so than the Liverpool-Chelsea clash at Anfield. Raphael, what happened here? Liverpool looked like world beaters. What did Hiddink spot that the rest of us had missed?
I don't know. I think they might have possibly scored too early, Liverpool, and started getting caught in two minds a little bit, because 1-0 would have been probably Rafa's preferred result after 90 minutes because they were up so early. This has happened to Chelsea as well in the past, and Balak was talking about it. You go up 1-0 in the European Cup at home and you think, what do we do now? Are we going for the second one? Are we keeping it tight? And they made a lot of mistakes. I'm not sure that hitting, despite playing playing to the media and saying, oh, we knew exactly what to do against Liverpool. We exploited all their weaknesses. I'm not sure that it was a battle of two minds that Hiddink won there. I think that, as Benitez said, Liverpool just made a hell of a lot of mistakes and were punished for it.
Well, you had a lot of Chelsea players playing really well. Ivanovic, but also the likes of Kalou, etc. Whereas a lot of Liverpool players, well, Steven Gerrard, for example, who did a good imitation of Amir Zaki, went completely missing.
He switched Etienne, who normally plays as one of two in midfield, he switched him into Mikel's role against Gerrard, and he just bossed him completely. You kind of think it might be a waste of Etienne playing him as a holding midfielder, but when someone is as influential as Gerrard, I think it makes sense, and Etienne wiped the floor with him, basically.
He certainly
did. I think that was really important to note. But I agree with Rafa, you get this kind of thing in Europe, when you score that early, you don't really know how to behave, and I think that kind of manifested itself in Liverpool's performance. By the time they needed to score again at 1-1, it was too late because Chelsea had all the impetus and carried that through.
With all the papers today full of the fact that this is equals the worst ever European result that Liverpool have had at home, and writing them off really for the writing off their chances in the second leg, I'm not sure about that. All they need to do is score three goals at Stamford Bridge. They scored three goals in Istanbul in 6 minutes, Rob.
They did, James, but... it's not going to happen, is it? You know, I'd love to know when the last time a team came back from a 3-1 home defeat against another really top team. But it just doesn't happen. It won't happen. John Terry's out, which gives Chelsea a greater chance of keeping a clean sheet.
If they have to go for it, which they do, obviously, and score three goals, that obviously increases Chelsea's chances of scoring one, which would almost certainly put an end to any hopes Liverpool have of progressing to the semi-final.
In a daft way, I think Liverpool might not mind this too much. Their priority is so obviously the league. And whatever Benitez said, I think this gives them a greater chance in the league. And in a way, they might not be as bothered as they would ordinarily by being absolutely hammered at home.
Right. They'd be more bothered if Manchester United were 7 points clear still.
Yeah, I think so, definitely.
Alrighty. I didn't see the game, but I came home from work and switched on Sky Sports News and was greeted by the sight of John Terry being interviewed, complaining about Liverpool players crowding around the referee and protesting about something. What the hell was all that about?
What's his job, probably?
Yes.
Yeah. Hiddink, the architect of this fantastic result, still due to be off in May. The fans would want him to stick around. The players want Mourinho to come back. Apparently, they're going to be getting instead Carlo Ancelotti, we now believe, Raphael.
Well, do we believe it?
Well, I think we do. I mean, this story's been floating around for a while. And, of course, it's not the first time they've tried to bring Carlo in. The Italian papers seem to be regarding it as a done deal in everything but, you know, officiality.
What's changed? Because he's been resisting that quite publicly. Has he had his mind changed for him?
I think he realises that I mean, every year we have this kind of Ancelotti will be out by Christmas thing, and he generally gets away with it. But it's been another disappointing season for Milan, and I think that the club are probably now come to the conclusion that it is time to move on. The fact that they've publicly said to him that he has to come third or else move, I think probably makes him feel that, all right, the weather's changed here. There's no longer that same bond. I mean, when you're publicly given an ultimatum like that, thank you very much. I think it maybe just shows you that the wind has changed.
Surely the availability of Sven-Goran Eriksson now will put a change to all that. There seems to be this pompous disbelief on behalf of Chelsea supporters that why on earth would Hiddink want to leave? But he has a very cushy number with the Russian Federation, and he gets, I presume, very, very well paid for it. So it's easy to see why he'd want to leave.
Mm. And the other thing is Chelsea are going to need significant rebuilding very soon. If Hiddink comes in for 4 months, wins, say, one of the two big trophies, walks out, he becomes a hero, someone else has to pick up the pieces of a squad that's still very old.
Right.
Why would anyone want
Ancelotti? Would be the perfect mate, because exactly. He's got such a track record of bringing in young players.
He'll think they're 18 years old by the standards. But why would anyone want Ancelotti? He never wins anything.
Well, two European Champions League titles.
Is not bad, but they don't really challenge for league titles.
No. Well, not since, when was it he won? Was it 2001? I think it was.
A long time ago.
Mm. A long time ago, as you say. Well, Chelsea are looking good then for the second leg of their quarter-final. Manchester United, though, looking anything but quintuple winners after their first leg at Old Trafford against Porto. Barry, you gave us a bit of a heads-up about this.
Yeah, well, I just think Porto were criminally underrated going into the tie. I mean, on Five Live, I believe our favourite commentator, Alan Green, was heard to say that it was a disgrace are an embarrassment that Manchester United were only drawing with Porto and that they'd been given a gimme into the semi-final. And if a man who thinks he knows as much about football as Alan Green does is saying things like that, you know, what are the rest of us plebs going to think?
Well, indeed. What went wrong for Man United?
Well, the same things that have gone wrong for the last month. But Porto, as Barry's, Porto were outstanding. I mean, I don't know, it's hard to
but
qualify that because
Porto were beaten 4-0 the last time they visited the Premier League club.
I don't know. I didn't see that game and I haven't seen them play, so you can only go on that. But at Old Trafford, they really were excellent. They were very brave and they just all looked very technically accomplished.
With the possible exception of Bruno Alves.
Oh,
who, yeah, he didn't play that well, did he? But you kind of, it's the whole thing when you win and lose, is it your fault or the opposition good? It's kind of a bit of both. United were dreadful defensively, but they were tested in a way they haven't been tested for a long, long time by Porto's front three.
Right, well, Vidic is saying that it's all the talk of quinduple, it's gone to their heads. Other people like Mr. Garethy, who says he writes off United, although I think the bookies would still make them favourite to go through. Mr. Garethy says that no English team, he lists his reasons here for...
No English team has won over, who cares? I don't really understand why people put so much store by these statistics.
All right, well, here's some other motives. Ronaldo's gone into a bigger petulant sulk than usual, and Scholes seems to be in decline, and the inept Van der Sar has finally been rumbled as being a bit too past it. This,
yeah, it's not just that they all look incredibly jittery. Like, you kind of, in those times, you look to someone else for strength, but there's only really Fletcher and Rooney who are sustaining them. The rest are not only making mistakes, but they look like they're physically or mentally shot, or both.
Right.
So I think they're going to have real trouble. I don't see them. I don't think they have a prayer in Porto, but I think they're going to have real trouble turning the season around, to be honest, because they look like a team who've just gone.
Wow, interesting, the quote you put in your little article yesterday.
Oh, from the Blackburn thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was obviously trying to goad them, but they started to drop points, and he said, when it goes very quickly, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Sir Alex Ferguson said that about Blackburn?
Well, he said it in reference to the year that Leeds won the league from United. United lost... They had four games in a week and lost three of them. And the whole idea is that once it goes, it does at that stage of the season. How do you get it back?
Because they've got a fixture pile as well, haven't they? They've got the game in hand in the Premier League. Mm. When are they playing that against Portsmouth?
I don't know. Basically, they play Wednesday, Saturday every week for the rest of the season if they stay in the European Cup.
All right. Well, this weekend they're playing at Sunderland. Is the slump going to continue?
that's, well, everyone keeps saying that's a great game to have, and it is, because Sunderland, as Barry knows, are playing pathetically at the moment. But I'm not sure, because United have, he'll want to rest players for Porto, the squad's stretched, so I wouldn't be surprised if that was an ugly draw.
I would.
It's a good game to have, but the way United are defending, I mean, they've conceded 10 in 4 games, could have been a lot more. I don't think any game is safe for them at the moment.
Does Rio Ferdinand make that much difference?
I think he does, but not just... I mean, he's played in two of these games, Fulham and Liverpool. Mm. Problem is, he's been carrying a back problem for a while now, so I think Ferdinand fully fit would make a difference, but whatever United get this season, I don't think is going to be a fully fit Ferdinand. He'll need an operation in the summer, so the best he'll play is kind of while he's feeling his back. I think they have huge problems.
Mm. I think one thing in United's favour going into the second leg is that the way Porto got the result, and Porto should have beaten them and were very unlucky not to win, and yet could have lost. So, you know, a draw was probably a fair result. But Porto tore into them from the start and attacked. Front men playing up, you know, very deep. And now they have to decide, well, do we stick or do we twist?
Well, exactly. Rafa talked about the psychology of Liverpool being 1-0, and I think in a way it suits United better to be 2-0 rather than 2-1 up, because at 2-1 up they would just go and play for a 0-0, which is incredibly dangerous. At 2-0 they have to attack, and as Barry says, how do Porto play? However, I think Porto, well, they drew 2-0 in the last round at Atletico Madrid and drew 0-0 at home, but I believe they absolutely battered Madrid. It could have been 5 or 6. I don't know if anyone saw the game. So in that sense, maybe they would just play as they did at Old Trafford and just go for it.
Well, there you go. They're going to be at Sunderland. Liverpool meanwhile are hosting Blackburn, and we'll be expecting to bounce back themselves against Rovers. Chelsea, meanwhile, host Bolton, who have actually drawn on each of their last two visits to Stamford Bridge, interestingly enough. And more on all those games as we head towards the weekend can be found at guardian.co.uk/football. But in a second or two, we're going to be moving on to the other Champions League quarterfinals and much, much more. Weekly Extra. If you want to hear Barry, Rob and Rafa's opinions passed off on as my own in the company of some hastily assembled European papers, do log on to our little video roundup of the press reaction to this week's quarterfinals, which should be up on a guardian.co.uk website near you on Friday. Good. Sid Lowe will be with us very, very shortly to discuss Barcelona-Bayern, the game that's got everyone a-yibbering and a-yabbering. But, Barry, you actually did minute by minute.
My fingers are still in pain from trying to keep up with Barcelona's absolutely sensational display.
Right.
They mullered Bayern Munich, who were incredibly lucky to get out of Nou Camp with a 4-0 defeat.
Right. Raphael Honigstein.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really decent result considering the performance that Bayern... or non-performance that Bayern did there. I mean, Franz Beckenbauer said afterwards that it's the most awful performance he's ever seen from Bayern.
And he played when they lost 4-0 to Ajax in 73, so he should know.
When Sepp Maier buried his goalkeeping outfit in one of the local canals after that game.
Speaking of burying, I love that little detail that you had, that they hid a sausage. They played hide the sausage. You know, what happened?
A journalist from Bild hid a white sausage under one of the corner flags to bring one of his team, or to bring his team luck.
Right.
And that really worked.
Yeah. Is that why they put in the worst performance I've ever seen in a European competition?
But he did it in broad daylight while posing for photographs.
Right.
So it would have been quite easy for Barcelona officials to find out where the sausage was and remove it.
Right.
But I doubt they bothered.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody's going crazy about Barcelona today. Rafael, similarly, an inverse reaction to Munich's performance, Bayern's performance.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the feeling is certainly that with Barcelona having all this fantastic width, the fact that Bayern has probably in Europe the poorest right back and left back out for that game really didn't help matters. Plus, Lucio missing, plus Klose missing. So you have these mitigating factors. At the same time, the one thing the fans expected, at least, and also the football, German footballing public at large, was a bit of resistance and a bit of character, and that wasn't really there. They were chasing shadows, And of course, it poses a real big question about Klinsmann's future, because I think he's got, you were talking about ultimatums before, he really has to win Saturday's game against Frankfurt in the league. Otherwise, I think Bayern will pull the plug on him.
Right. My word. What, already, or they'll wait till the end of the season?
Well, I think if they lose or draw against Frankfurt, they might do it earlier, because they're in serious danger of missing out on the Champions League. They're currently only fourth.
Mm.
They need to get third, finish third at least, and even that's not a guaranteed spot this year.
Who would be coming in? It's Sven Göran Eriksson, I presume.
He was actually highly rated a few years ago by the Bayern board. I hope that has since changed. There is no.
They haven't got anyone like
Plan
that.
B. No, there is no right. No name in the draw, as it were. Franz Beckenbauer, of course, used to do it a couple of times in similar situations, but I don't think he'll do it again.
We should, amongst all this, turn our attention to Barcelona, who are every bit as good as Bayern were bad. And let's dial up the good doctor in Madrid to hear what the Spanish press are making of this Blaugrana performance. Hi, Sid.
How you doing?
How are you?
I'm all right. I'm making a run from my past.
I'm sorry?
I'm making a break for the border. I'm dashing away from the English-Spanish border towards the Spanish side.
Interesting, Sid. Where exactly is this happening?
Well, if the sun moved ever so slightly further around to the right, I'd be literally in the shadow of the Rock of Gibraltar.
Right. Okay, you're near the Rock of Gibraltar. Can I ask why?
Some secret governmental business. No, I've got to do some paperwork involving marriage certificates and stuff like that in Gibraltar.
Marriage certificates, Sid?
Yes.
Are you getting married to a monkey?
a Barbary ape, I think they're known as, actually. Yes. I'll have you know. But yes, I am. No. not to a monkey.
You're getting married, Sid?
Yeah, in the summer, yeah.
Oh, nice one. Is that her?
Yes.
Oh, nice one. Hello.
I will tell her that Baz has described her as a monkey.
I heard.
Oh, she heard.
Hello, soon to be Mrs. Dr. Sid.
Hello.
Hello.
Right, okay. Well, this is fantastic stuff. Forget
that. God, this will make great listening later, won't it?
Yeah, it certainly will. I tell you what, speaking of a terrific match...
Speaking of monkeys,
that's very good. I see what you did there. Well done.
Speaking of high school, yeah, no.
What
about this Barcelona business, hey Sid?
Yeah, they were brilliant, weren't they? They were really fantastic. It's kind of comforting in a way, I think, to the whole of Spain, that Barcelona can destroy other teams as well, not just Spanish ones. Because there's been a slight feeling that perhaps Real Madrid's destruction at the hands of Liverpool kind of suggested that maybe the Spanish league's not as strong as they hoped. And this, I think, comforts everyone up to a point, although, of course, Real Madrid fans will only take relatively cold comfort from it.
But all the Spanish press are excited about it, not just the Catalan?
Yeah, absolutely. Both Marca and AS, the two main Madrid dailies, and, of course, the best-selling sports papers in the country, that are both very, very pro-Real Madrid. I mean, they always have, because of, obviously, questions of patriotism to some extent and to supporting their own team. They always have, to some extent, a backing for Barcelona and, of course, Villarreal as well in the Champions League. But this time around, they're really getting excited. And they're saying, I suppose with some justification, that Barcelona are already in the semi-finals, when you consider that 177 4-0s has been in European competition and nobody's ever turned it round in the second leg.
Right. Barry, who's doing minute by minute, as you no doubt know, Sid, was very upset about Howard Webb's performance.
Well, he booked Leo Messi for... Messi was brought down. It was a legitimate penalty shout, and he got a yellow card for simulation. And then he didn't even book Mark Van Bommel for trying to take Messi's head clean off his shoulders.
It's purely accidental.
With his shoulder. I mean, I think it was more of a punishment to leave him on the pitch, but at least one yellow card should have come out for that.
Yeah, and obviously Guardiola was furious about it as well, because Howard Webb then sent him off because Guardiola went absolutely crazy. And Guardiola himself said after the game that perhaps he should have controlled himself more. But as he rightly pointed out, you know, at that stage, I didn't know that we would finish 4-0. There was a chance that Bayern might score. There was a chance that the tie would be in the balance. So denying us a penalty that would have made it 3-0 and set us on our way very nicely was really out of order. And as Guardiola said quite rightly, even a blind man would have seen that was a penalty. The trouble is, obviously, Howard Webb is three or four steps below a blind man in terms of making judgments.
Yeah, the pod speaking out as usual on the important issues. It is a potential problem, though, for Barca, because, what is it, if Messi picks up another yellow card... Two. He's got to get two more, is he?
Yeah, you get suspended after three, then five, right. Seven, nine. So,
which is a real improvement, because obviously, I mean, I think most people would agree, we're absolutely sick of seeing really good players miss finals
right.
when they haven't been particularly dirty. They've just picked up 2-0 yellow cards over the course of 5 or 6 games. Of course, it would have happened to Gascoigne in 1990. Mm. You know, there's millions of cases,
Pavel
aren't
Nedved.
There? Yep. Pavel Nedved, which was particularly sad when Juventus got to the final. Yeah, it was a foul on Steve McManaman, I think, if I remember rightly, in the semi-final that cost him that final. And so I think in that sense, it would be a real shame. So it's good that it's free cards. The other thing is, I guess there might be half a chance of someone looking at the video and appealing it. But I imagine that UEFA would just tell Barcelona where to go if they try.
Hmm. I checked today, and it costs €1,000 to lodge an appeal.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting.
It's like all sorts of stuff. I suppose it's, you know, you're making us do some work. You're making us process some paperwork. So you can pay us €1,000 for the effort.
I presume it's refunded if the card is overturned, but you never know.
Very, very much.
Oh, would you?
Yeah. Sid, listen, just on the subject of Barca. So everybody in raptures over their performance. Any kind of mitigation there that it was only Bayern Munich, this team that had shipped 5 against Wolfsburg on the weekend?
Yeah, in truth, there is. And as you can probably imagine, the person leading the line, well, you probably can't imagine because I'm sure you don't know him, but if I tell you that Thomas Guas, who's a columnist in the Sports Daily AS, who's an Espanyol fan, but really and truly he's a Real Madrid fan in disguise. He just kind of does the kind of whole Espanyol thing. Every joke he ever cracks is always the same one. It's basically Barcelona, a bunch of Catalan sods. And he's done a piece today saying, well, they've beaten someone who's absolutely rubbish. And there is an element of truth in that. And certainly the night before the game, and obviously me and Rafael both did this as well, were saying that, you know, Bayern just can't live with this team. And I suppose in a way it's nice to be proved correct, but that has lent itself to one or two people saying, well, it was only Bayern Munich.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, the other quarterfinal, of course, featured Villarreal hosting Arsenal, and that was all the way back on Tuesday. 1-1, cup half empty, half full for Arsenal. I'm not sure. We'll talk about that in a second. Galison, Almunia injured. But how did Villarreal feel about the result?
Well, they felt, and you know, the press are saying this today, but when we said it in The Guardian yesterday, and it was obviously off the back of the talking to players and the managers after the game, I think Villarreal felt that they probably should have got more than one goal and they should have got away with a victory, although obviously to what extent you can argue that, because Arsenal really got on top again in the second half. They now feel that, hang on a minute, the way to look at this is in the last round we got a 1-1 draw at home against Panathinaikos. Everybody thought we were out, and we went to Greece and got a fantastic 2-1 result. Now, obviously, going to the Emirates and doing that is probably going to be a little bit harder, but they certainly believe it's not over, and I think they've been encouraged by what happened in the first half. But the problem is, I think they've also found, and it's very interesting listening to Robert Pirès say this, and of course he's a guy that knows, but he's not the only one saying it. Gordon said it. Marco Senna even said it before the game. The problem was that Villarreal couldn't live with Arsenal's intensity and the pace with which they played. They both play very nice football. The difference is Arsenal play it that little bit quicker. And I think once Arsenal were able to impose themselves in the game, it was difficult for Villarreal. So I think there is a recognition that the differences between the Spanish League and the English League sometimes then come to pass as well in the Champions League if you can't live with the pace of the other side.
Mm. Indeed. The special swan, Sid, says, can I ask Dr. Sid to tell the full version of the Xavi Alonso at Real Sociedad story that was interrupted by all the lobster jokes? Was there something else that we missed there?
Not really. I mean, basically what I said was that Xavi Alonso's mates used to give him a sea bass for every goal he scored. Basically, as a lot of Spanish people do, they have kind of what's known informally as a peña, a group of very, very close mates that go out and eat after virtually every game, and they were mates who quite enjoyed fishing, and his mate said to him, for every goal you score, we're going to get you a sea bass and we're going to cook it for you, and that's what happened. He didn't score very many at Real Sociedad.
Right. Okay.
Can I add a little interesting addendum to the pig Osasuna pig story?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was looking at the YouTube footage of it yesterday on my screen in the office, and some colleague, I don't know who he is, but he had two young girls in with him, his daughters, and they saw me looking at the pigs on my screen. And he asked me, oh, what are you looking at? And I explained the story about Osasuna getting the pigs and the cute little piggies on the screen. And then I said to his daughters, do you know what the players are going to do with the pigs? And they went, what? And I said, they're going to eat them. And the littlest of the two girls started to cry.
Those evil footballers and their evil journalists telling their stories. It's not right, is it? I did notice actually someone on the blogs, not that I should really be bothering to read them because we'll only get upset, won't we? Pointed out that pigs don't actually sweat. So if the colour run, it must have run for another reason. But what it does do, if pigs don't sweat...
Somebody posted back, Sid, they said that whoever wrote that had obviously never been in a Newcastle nightclub.
Very good. I like that. That's much better. And also, it leads me on to cliches. As soon as the cliche is, sweat like a pig. Now, if pigs don't sweat, where do we get the cliche from? Which leads us on to all sorts of other things.
Well, they don't fly either. And I remember one of the...
You kick them hard enough.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. For example, if pigs don't sweat, does that mean that parrots don't get sick?
It's an interesting question, that, Sid, which we'll have to leave to another time, because we've abused your wife-to-be's patience for long enough. So you get off and enjoy the sunshine there in southern Spain, and we'll just press on, with the Football Weekly Extra. Thanks, Sid.
My pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers, then. Excellent. Well, Arsenal, quick mention for them. Good result, though. They got an away goal. They lost, though, William Gallas. Almunia, I believe, is expected to be fit again for the return match next Wednesday. They're 7 points. No, 6 points clear in the battle for fourth place in the Premier League. But Gallas, how much are you going to be missed?
Not too much. I think they're stealthily building some fantastic momentum. What's interesting is they still play each of the top three in the title race. So
yeah,
they could kind of decide it inadvertently.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about the Premier League weekend shortly. Quick look at some posts. Brian Clough's ego wants to know from you, Rafa, Bayern Munich apart, do German fans in general have the same mutual spitefulness towards bankroll clubs as we generally do in England?
There's certainly a lot of hostility towards clubs that are somehow perceived as artificial, i.e. owned by a company, or in the case of Hoffenheim, bankrolled by a billionaire.
All right, owned by a company would be what, like Bayer Leverkusen?
Yeah, Bayer Leverkusen are the company of Bayer, and are the team of Bayer, and Volkswagen own Wolfsburg 100% and support them, and it's through their support that a team that only can sell out a stadium of 30,000 is actually fighting for the title in Germany. Mm. So there is that bit of, we've got more history, you're artificial. They used to call Leverkusen the test tube club for that reason. But I think to a certain extent, Hoffenheim have perhaps softened people's attitude up a little bit, because they've shown that, yes, we have a lot of money, but we can spend it really wisely and do something really exciting and almost behave like a startup company and change the old order, as it were. But there is still this sort of traditionalism, slightly old school. You have to have it played for the last 500 years before you're worthy of anything, attitude hanging around.
Sadly. Reminds me of Scousers.
Huh.
Yes.
You had to get that in, didn't you?
Yeah.
A little pop there. All right, okay.
Fans are always going on.
I'm going to move on. Earl Barrett for England says, I fancy stirring up the debate that Shawnee Boy, his phrase not mine, tried to start in the last pod about best Wembley Cup final since 87. I may be a touch biased, but Villa against Man United in the 94 League Cup final was a cracker. Shot result, excellent diving handball red card, and a gut-churning green and yellow strip. What's not to love? Rob, are you a fan?
The result, everything.
Okay.
Did Sean say Luton Arsenal?
Well, he said Luton Scunthorpe from last Sunday, and then Luton Arsenal.
It's like he's from Luton or something.
Yeah, you'd think.
That's enough Luton.
But Sean must be the only person from Luton in the world that wasn't at the final last Sunday. So he should hang his head in shame, really.
Indeed he should. For that and many, many, many other reasons. Now, Christian FM4, how do you say hats off in Italian? Tanto di cappello. Yep. Steve Grant, thanks for clearing up that business about Southampton FC Limited, 100% owned subsidiary of SLH PLC, etc., etc., etc.
Many thanks. I noticed Rupert Lowe was on Sky Sports News yesterday, and he was being interviewed and asked, why is it that you think Southampton fans hate your guts? And his first reason was that his name is Rupert, and his second was that I'm posh and a toff, and they don't like me for that reason. And maybe they don't like him for those reasons, but I'd say the main reason they don't like him is because he's destroyed their club, which he didn't really allude to at all.
Yeah, but Rupert, come on. All right, Lou Yibin might be. After seeing Hulk up front for Porto, Old Trafford, is there a superhero 11 to replace the dead horse that is the dirty name 11? You got Robin, I suppose. Anyone else?
David Beckham looks like Wolverine at the moment with that absurd.
Right, I don't know if there's. Can we do. It's not looky likey, is it really? It's names.
I'm sorry.
Right. Well, maybe
see, now we're going to move on to a video game 11, and I'd like to propose Nigel Spackman as the first name on the team sheet. followed by Steve Froggatt. This one could run and run.
I tell you what you're
Mario
saying.
Mario Melchiot.
Yeah. Magnificent. Have you?
No, I haven't prepared. I don't know where it's coming from. I'm on fire.
Jeez. Yeah?
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. Right. Well, you set the bar very high there, Barry, and congratulations.
Oh, Fabrizio Bubble Bobble. I just made him up.
All right. Ben Trucker, what no championship? Many people, in fact, complaining about lack of championship coverage. So, should we have a quick chat about the championship? Or
could we have a quick chat about people complaining about the lack of championship?
Well, they'll complain, and then it's even more boring if we complain about them complaining about etc. So let's just say, you know, we try to fit it in where space permits, but we'll be doing that very, very shortly. Let me just say as we close off part two that if you would like to get in touch with us to complain about the many, many shoddy aspects of this podcast, then the place to do it, forming an orderly line, is guardian.co.uk/footballweekly or our Facebook page. Barry's got an important disclaimer here for his top video games, top 11.
But just that you're not allowed to use characters from video games that are football games.
Right. Raphael's crossing off FIFA 09 on his notepad there. Right, well, we look forward to seeing how that one goes. Championship, eh? All sorts of interesting things have been happening. Birmingham beat Wolves, top two there. Oh, Cardiff thrashed Derby to keep their promotion hopes alive. Sheffield United up to third now, and a big Rob, do you know about this? The battle that they had at against Barnsley.
The police were involved, weren't they?
Well, yeah, the two teams had to be separated by the police. I'm not sure.
I'm all for stuff like that.
Yeah,
I want more of that. More random violence.
What sparked it? I don't know if it was random. That's the thing.
Well.
I don't know what sparked it. I know there was a bit of shenanigans going on before the game, wasn't there?
I think it was to do with the multi-ball system. When Sheffield United, when it was 0-0, they had about 50 balls around.
24.
Well done. As soon as they were 1-0 up, they had one. And
Barnsley took ill to this.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth getting the police involved over.
Right. Okay.
But the blame for all these schmozzles Sheffield United used to find themselves in used to be always laid at the door of Neil Warnock, who hasn't been there for two seasons now, but they're still involved in all of them. So maybe it wasn't down to him. And they're just a dirty, dirty team.
Okay, well, it looks fascinating there in the championship. We're making sure that we're going to schedule a proper championship roundup with proper championship experts for sometime next week. Thursday, perhaps. That's one to look out for. A quick mention for Laird of Lard, who's upset that we didn't mention Glossop North End's historic FA Vars semi-final victory over Chalfont St Peter. Now only the obese shirtless Geordies of Whitley Bay stand between the Hillman and Wembley silverware. Tell you what, the views of Laird of Lard in no way reflect those of Guardian.co.uk.
Is there any game that's not taking place at Wembley?
It's interesting, isn't it? It's almost like they've got a big debt to recoup. Yeah. And,
desperate.
All right. Oh, relegation battle. Now, there's all sorts of other games going on, but of course it's all about the relegation battle. And this weekend, Newcastle, who are now 3 points off safety, are at Stoke. Newcastle have won only one of their last 13 Premier League outings. They'd really like to win this one. Any chance for it happening?
Not a prayer. Stoke won the best teams in the league at home. I think they'll muscle Newcastle out of it, win 1-0 or 2-0.
And they've got, you were talking about momentum. Stoke got loads of momentum.
We should give them credit, really. We kind of get lost. And they are hideous to watch. There's no escaping that.
They're not that bad.
They are. But I mean, what's he supposed to do with the resources? We have to give him credit. Buying James Beattie was an incredibly smart piece of business.
He's got 6 goals in 10 Premier League games for Stoke.
Yeah, and I think they're about 6 points clear now of the relegation zone.
Well, they've
gone
up from 17th to 13th.
Well, it's the Easter weekend coming up, and I believe in the resurrection under the new Messiah.
Right, but they use long balls more than crosses.
Who?
Never mind, I was just going for a cheap Easter game. Yeah, let's move on.
Yes, got it. Fine.
Right, okay.
I think Newcastle are underrated. I think that they're not as bad as they look.
Okay.
See, I value Rafa's opinions about certain things and think he's an intelligent man. And then he comes out with something like that and it just sets me right back to square one.
I think against Chelsea they were not a million miles away from getting a result.
I saw them play Arsenal and they were excellent.
They were 90 minutes away from getting a result.
No, it's not true.
Right. True. Okay. Well, Sunderland, we were talking about teams who might drop in debt, give them a helping hand. Sunderland are going to be hosting Manchester United. We talked about that before, and they're hardly informed. Portsmouth, who only lost one of their last 6 games, are hosting West Bromwich Albion, so you'd have to figure that they're going to be okay. Hull, the next team up, who are a whopping 5 points off relegation, they are at Borough in a game that I think everybody says that Borough absolutely must win if they're to stand even the slightest chance of getting out of the bottom three this year.
This is very true. And right. I think they will win it. And if they do, presuming Portsmouth at least get a result and maybe Newcastle, then suddenly Hull are in serious trouble.
In the race for fourth place, we mentioned Arsenal before. They are at Wigan. And Villa, meanwhile, and Everton, the two teams behind them, will be facing each other. If the season had started on February the 1st, Villa would be second bottom in the Premier League.
And if your aunt had balls, she'd be your uncle.
Well, indeed. Yeah, but it's an interesting statistic, I think.
I wouldn't rule Villa out for fourth, you know. They have a very good running. Hey? Seriously, they were excellent last week. They've had a rest. They have a really decent running. And Arsenal, as we said earlier, have to play the top three. So it's conceivable. Say they lose two of those, suddenly the six-point gap goes, and then it's on. I think Villa will win most of their games.
And finally, Man City will be hosting Fulham. Man City, of course, have a phenomenal record at home, but I don't know why I just have this funny thing that Fulham, who are traditionally not a very good side away, might get a result there at Easton's, possibly because City, in the wide world of UEFA Cup football, they have a game on Thursday night against Hamburg.
Yes, they do.
Hmm?
It's going to be a very interesting game.
Hamburg, good side, of course, Martin Jol.
Yeah, joined top. Right. Just a goal difference away from Wolfsburg. Very, very interesting game. And I think that you're right, because City have effectively nothing to play for in the league anymore. And I think this is exactly the sort of squad that will just say, why should we play today? Well, we finished 10th or 9th. It really doesn't make a difference. I know there's an outside chance that could somehow get into 7th. But I think the Manchester Evening News did a stat, and the worst 7th place team in the last 10 years or so had 53 points. And they are on 38. So
you talk about the collective pride of the Bundesliga being hit last night. How much would it be hit if a team of joint top lose to a nothing mid-table team in England?
City have, of course, have got the sort of the Schalke factor behind them, so they could always say, "Well,
the what factor?"
I call them Schalke because in German you say Schalke.
Oh, would call them I think Schalke. You were right first time, actually. But,
they have the money. They've spent, of course, almost 60 million euros to buying two Hamburg players from them. So it wouldn't be seen as a huge tragic upset. But I think at the same time, Hamburg were kind of quietly bullish about their chances. They're chasing the treble. They're in form. City have not been that impressive in Europe or indeed in the Premier League, as you said. So I think it's all set up for them.
There is one Italian team still in the UEFA Cup. The only Italian team still in Europe, that's Udinese, who are taking on Werder Bremen.
It's a big game for that reason, because they are that game could very well make the difference. Mm.
And Werder Bremen have already seen off two Italian sides
exactly
this season in the Champions League.
From 2010-11.
Yeah.
Whether there's only going to be three Italian leagues, Italian teams in the Champions League, right. So.
Huge match,
it's a big
that.
Game.
Yeah,
big game.
All right. Well, we might be paying some attention to the UEFA Cup in Monday's podcast. Just to say about Italy, that coming up this weekend is the Rome Derby. But I think most people would probably agree with De Rossi, Daniele De Rossi, who says that he thinks that all the Serie A games should be postponed this weekend as the country reels from that terrible earthquake in Abruzzo. The Serie B games, which played on the Friday, have been rescheduled because it's a day of mourning over there.
Presumably, Berlusconi doesn't believe this should be postponed.
After his comments that the people in the tent city should just see it as a bit of a camping weekend.
Mm. How is he a prime minister? The man is a disgrace.
Well, it's funny because, you know, that comment has been picked up hugely over here or down there in the UK.
Not just because of
but
that
in Italy,
comment.
In Italy, it kind of sailed past just another of his. But he's famous for it. I mean, he is the man who told a German journalist who was asking him one or two difficult questions once that he reminded him of a concentration camp guard.
But even at the recent G20 summit, or whatever it is, he's getting in the photos with Obama, like lads at a pissed guys at a stag party,
yep.
You know, not turning up for other photo calls because he's yammering into his mobile phone. He's just unbelievable.
Do you remember his bandana with?
And I say this as someone who comes from a country whose prime minister, Taoiseach, is and he's a neighbour of mine nearly at home, is equally embarrassing. But Berlusconi is no statesman.
Well, I just think, although his line about Barack Obama having a nice tan is pretty good, but I think you're right, James. I mean, the fact that he did compare a journalist to a concentration camp, that I mean, that would never, that would never happen in a place like London, for example. A politician could get away with that.
Very nice, because Ken's a listener, of course.
Is yeah. Hello,
hi Ken. Coming to the end of a broad-ranging Football Weekly Extra. Many, many thanks for your participation, Rob Smythe,
James,
Barry Glendening,
James,
and Raphael Honigstein, the legend, and producer Pete. And thanks for your patience there at home. We will, or wherever you're listening to this, we'll be back with you after the Easter weekend on Monday. We're coming in on Monday anyway. And have a lovely Easter, everyone. Bye.